So one of the reasons why we want to take the time we felt was important to be able to convey the impact of this event is that Jane was over by Trader Joe's a couple weeks ago and noticed one of the more traditional ministries on South Hill had about 500 people trying to get their kids to their youth camp in 1 week. And the question was, why is that not happening here? And in part, it's because we're keeping this a secret, our program. Insofar as we know its value, its worth, but what we haven't done is a great job of really enrolling you to really look at your family and to consider what would be the impact for you to have the young people in your life being brought up in this consciousness, given the world that we have now. And should not this program, that youth program, be one of our most thriving and mission-critical programs of our ministry? So with that said, we're just wanting to make sure that next year we do a greater job of inviting our grandkids here, inviting our kids to bring their kids, because this is the easiest way to introduce young people to unity. And we all know, in terms of organizational development, it's the children that bring the parents to church. Unless we're all grown up, and then we bring ourselves to church, and then we wish our children would be here, right? Okay, well, that's enough said. All right, this is a center update with Dr. Gary, an opportunity for me to share a bit about what goes on behind the scenes. And due to the announcements in the center update, this morning's talk is going to be preempted due to insufficient time. I'm just joking. So you heard an announcement about next week is going to be a community member orientation, an opportunity for those of you who are new to Unity Spiritual Center to examine your interest in joining and belonging to our community. We have a phased approach to community membership. The first is becoming a community member, then the second is a governing member. But in the context of recognizing that there are new people that have joined us on our journey since Jane and I have been here. So Jane and I are the new ministers. We've been here about a year and 4 or 5 months right now. And so those of you who are just joining us probably don't know that Jane and I are both half-time. We're half-time ministers. There's probably a lot of other things you might not know. For instance, that there are 9 staff people in Unity Spiritual Center. All of them are half-time or less, except for one full-time person. And that's Terry Sander, and she's the full-time employee. Jane is half-time, I'm half-time, everyone else is half-time or less. And we love it that way, actually. That's not broken. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's important, especially in context of Jane and me, that you understand that our half-time means that we have separate roles, different roles. In other words, it's easy when you come to a church and see the ministers, you have a concept of all the ministers sort of doing the same thing. Well, Jane and I don't know if this is news to you, but we're a little bit different. So the things that Jane loves to do, I don't like to do. And the things that I love to do, Jane hates to do. So wouldn't it be important for you to know which is which? You get my drift. Okay, so with that said, so here is a Venn diagram that looks at the distribution of the ministerial role, and this is really important for you to be clear about this because it's what helps feed the passion that Jane and I have for ministry. So in essence, very quickly, is that on Jane's side of the Venn diagram are all the things that have to do with pastoral care and the community and making sure that everybody is doing okay. And for me, I'm on this side of the Venn diagram, and that's all about the organization, making sure we're paying our bills and making sure that the organization is healthy. And then we meet in the middle where we both like to do the things that have to do with engaging on Sunday service and classes and things. So when it comes to things like counseling or special services, memorials, that's Jane's passion. And it's not mine. It's just not in me. I just don't have that. My passion is talking about how to grow churches, talking about how to do the deeper work of really transforming lives. That's sort of my passion. It has less to do with the things that Jane loves to do. So that being said, we also want to acknowledge that in addition to the 9 staff employees of this church, we have probably about 30 or 40 mission-critical volunteers that make sure this organization operates. And in the future, we're going to be sharing information about the well-being of our facility, which has an expiration date. And it's going to fall upon us to manage that dynamic. We don't know what that's going to look like in the future, but we know that we're going to have to ultimately reconcile our community in a space that is needing things that we right now can't afford. And so as we move together towards a shared future, we want to do it in a way where everyone has information, where everyone can see that we're working on the same thing, so all of us have a kind of coherence that enables us to be more, enables us to accomplish what our purpose is. So with that said, let's move on into our Sunday morning process. Now I return the experience of your life back over to you.
Let us take a few deep, deep breaths and exhale those energies that brought us to this place right now and allow us to embrace the meditation space that you are sitting in, that you are experiencing at this moment. And we know that as we take nice, deep, delicious, cleansing breaths, we are calming our soul and focusing our mind. We know that it is the faith that we have within us that brings us to this point and closer to that spirit that we call all goodness in life. If you could right now, bring your heart into a coherence and into that center. Visit that place where you often go in order to quiet yourself and become one with spirit. Envision that within your body, within your soul, and see it right now. And as you do that, continue to breathe. And breathe in a memory, a person, an activity, something that makes your heart sing. Allow yourself to embrace that right now. And in the summertime, it could be our outdoors. It could be family, friends, people that you share things with that make your heart sing. Now embrace that feeling. That feeling you have right now. Your heart is open and aware, and breathing in the love, the joy, and the faith that makes it all happen. And with your heart open, allow yourself to embrace this moment, to embrace it, live it, and love it, knowing that the light, love, an activity of God is within you always. We bring ourselves to this heart awareness, so we are open to the message this morning. We are open to the connection that we make with each other. And we are open to be able to spread peace throughout the world, the peace and the prayer and the love throughout the world, loving our earth. We take this time to love and know. And in just a few minutes of silence, few moments of silence, allow yourself to listen in the silence. May you know the peace and the love that you feel right now as you breathe deep and embrace our energy this morning. In His precious Holy Spirit, thank you, thank you, thank you, God. Amen.
Well, watching you, Britt, I mean, you are literally angelic. Just, I mean, just awesome. So cool. All right, so this is a series I've been doing, Making Your Mind Matter, and the subtitle, Be Transformed by the Renewing of Your Mind, and this is something that Paul mentioned, and it's important in the context that we need to understand that the spiritual journey requires us to be conscious. I should be speaking to the choir in so far as that's concerned, right? We acknowledge that the spiritual path requires that we be conscious, awake, aware, if we are to really align ourselves with the activity of Spirit, the greater activity of Spirit that is wanting to move us towards our greater good and experiencing an abundant, fulfilled life. And so it's important that we be able to strengthen our capacity to use our mind as a resource to our spiritual journey. So that's the context of this series of talks. And it's going to take a while to say all the things that could be said about this sort of thing. And we'll try to make it interesting along the way. But this today's talk is a little bit of a recap. Interestingly, when we do one Sunday service as opposed to two, typically when we're doing two services, I find that after I hear what I'm saying after the first talk, I think I need to say this in my second talk. And so that not able to happen, it happens for me after I listened to last time I spoke, and I think, well, now I forgot to say this. And so that's what the recap part is. Okay, I'm bringing something back that I felt was integral to what I was trying to communicate last time. Then the review has to do with really tying up all the ends, because we want to move into the next part of using our mind to manifest our destiny. I mean, who doesn't want to go there? Who wants to stay sort of in this conversation that I have to be with what I'm having before I can get what I want? I mean, who wants to listen to too many more of those kinds of conversations? But the regardless of where our preference is, you know, we really want to get to the good stuff, and you know, sort of okay, we'll listen to the other stuff that's important. It's sort of like the doctor telling us what we have to do. That isn't the fun stuff to the healing journey, but it's important. It's important that we acknowledge that. Whatever we're having that's arising in our life experience is there. It's for us. But if it appears as if we've made it more difficult than it takes to be present to what we're having, then part of the problem is how we're being with our life as opposed to how our life is. So we have to kind of finish that conversation up a bit, because ultimately we want to get to a place where we acknowledge that if we are to move towards manifesting our destiny, we have to somehow make conscious the very things that we have deep down inside of us that negates those intentions, right? And so there's a challenge there that we have to understand and then disentangle from, because we can have the best principle, we can have an exact understanding of truth, but totally undermine it with our inadequacy when it's unconscious. So we have a little bit more to learn about how our mind works and what the arena is of transformation that enables us to move coherently through learning how to systematically understand the way in which we can manifest our greater destiny. Now, we're already masters of manifestation. It's just that most of what we're manifesting in our life is unconscious, is running us as opposed to us running it. And so we'll have to deal with that as well. And so then we get to the new mind. What we're moving towards is a conversation about acquiring a new mind in biblical terms. If you want me to use a bit of Bible, I'll do it right now. Watch it. Here it comes. It's coming. We could say the very same thing by saying, let that mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus. So there is a greater mind that we can acquire, align with, that has it already all figured out. And we could describe that mind as sort of like the Christ mind, but let's not get too religious, because people are different places with the biblical stuff, and there's a lot of allergies around those kinds of things. So we're going to keep it... Because I'm wanting to grow our church, not just having the few folks that are aligned with my specific biblical perspective, you see. Instead, I'm wanting to open our conversation up so wherever you are in whether or not the Bible supports or is against your own spiritual journey, it doesn't really matter, because I'm talking about terms that are relevant to where we are in our own understanding of how our brain works, how our adult developmental psychology plays into how we're being with what we're having. All of this is important and relevant to the conversation of our spiritual journey. And so to the degree that it's necessary to kind of help you bridge whether or not we're still spiritual, I'll be capable of doing that for you. I'm fluent in theology, but... I prefer to be able to speak more eclectically to these principles. That's my preference. So before I begin, I do want to check in with you, because I've had something on my mind that has been somewhat of a concern. So as many of you know, I've returned from not being a pulpit minister after having 18 years of not being anybody's minister, but rather being in the ministry, the work of ministry, with respect to helping ministry leaders develop their organizations. That's sort of been my path. And part of my leaving pulpit ministry was because I wasn't very good at it. And more specifically, my life didn't seem to represent the suitable example for a path you might want to follow as an example of what it means to live these spiritual principles. So in other words, in order for me to proceed more authentically with being able to be transparent and share aspects of my journey that are important for you to kind of have a sense of how I work through this kind of thing, to be able to convey that information, to be able to talk about my past, but I got to acknowledge that I have some trepidation in doing so. Because when I speak about my past, I'm 66 years old now, and I feel like I've acquired enough life experience where I should be able to talk about my past without anybody hearing my story and then holding it against me. I mean, am I asking too much? Okay, so you're saying, therefore, then you give me permission for me to talk about the stupid, crazy things that I've experienced or initiated in my life, and you're not going to hold that against me. And so my sense is that it might be therapeutically helpful for you to hear about some of my mistakes, because it'll make your life seem to be so much better. So it's almost as if that I'm in ministerial service to you by explaining the errors of my journey. Is that what I'm picking up? Okay, so for instance, I can share things like, I can talk about my past wife experiences, for instance. And that'd be okay. The numerous past wife experiences that I've had. I can talk about being a serial relationship killer. Can anybody relate? Anybody ever fail in a relationship before? All right, okay. So, well, that's helpful. I appreciate that because it's going to be important for you to understand that in the 45 years that I've been in Unity, I've been in Unity for since I was 20 years old. I was married into it. My first wife was born into Unity. And I was on David's board, wherever you are, David, when I was really young, you know, in Unity. And so you would think that that would be a real advantage. That there would be some kind of early bird special when you get into... when you discover new thoughts. Oh, I'm just 20 years old. I'm just looking back, looking out when I'm 66, where I'll be, you know, wow. So, but the point is that, you know, this is sort of funny in the sense that, yeah, I've been in Unity a long time, and so you could say, well, what do you have to show for it? And that's a valid question, I suppose. And in some ways, that's my job. My job is to show you what I have to show for it. And it's up to you to decide if that seems to make sense for you, if you want to try that as well. So in some ways, my role in ministry is to be a kind of on scouts. I'm down the road from you all, and I've come back on Sunday to report what I've noticed in our transformative journey, because I think it's mission critical. It's integral to our process. And because, you know, that's where we all are. We're all making up our own story, right? Yeah. Okay. Okay, I might have to do a Sunday talk on that one. But the point is that in the 45 years that I've been, you know, God, I haven't even gotten my talk yet. In the 45 years that I've been in Unity, I've noticed some improvement. And if you look back at your life, hopefully you've noticed some improvement. And so when I first got into Unity, you know, it was like the Disneyland, the Magic Kingdom. You know, you just felt like you could accomplish anything. And then over the years, you know, you deepen in your awareness and your spiritual practice. And so I found that I've become more non-judgmental, more loving, more understanding. I recycle. And I've evolved. I used to say I no longer am a Republican, but that doesn't work in some audiences. But the point is that all of our journey is a journey of evolution, right? But what we need to understand is what really evolved. So when you ask me, well, what do you have to show for it in the 45 years you've been involved in Unity? What I have to show for it is a different mind. Is a mind that has a different way of organizing my experience. And so where I used to organize my experience in the context of life happening to me, and therefore being in this kind of victim place, where having to have things be a certain way, where needing to be right became a coping strategy, to where I am right over here, where this is where our talks are. Jane and my talks are really about us explaining how our life can be when we're in the midst of internalizing our experience in the context of it's all for us. And so the only difference is where I've come from in my own journey of meaning making. Can you see how that's so? So the spiritual journey is a journey of our making our life mean more and more and more. It's just God going on until we're at the ultimate place in that journey where we could describe as this is the Christ mind. This is where Jesus was, or this is where the Buddha was, or whatever is the standard by which we see here's a more enlightened perspective. That perspective always brings into the awareness within our mind that it's all for us. That's what we're trying to do in the context of evolving our mind. Moving it from there are exceptions the principle that there's just God going on, to there are no exceptions, it's just all God. Doesn't that make sense? Okay, so that's the introduction to my talk. All right, so now comes the recap. So last time, it's very interesting because when we, Jane and I noticed that Jane will have a tendency to always be working on her talk because, you know, she writes it all out. I mean, what's up with that? You know, she's got to know exactly all the things she's going to say. And then the way the universe works for her is that she gets sent these challenges to prove what principle she's trying to convey during the week. So she, like, creates her own karma when she's doing her talks. I don't like that process. I mean, I'd just rather do my talk and then find out next week what I'm supposed to work on. Because then I thought about it a little bit already. But, well, anyway, so last week I was talking about how, you know, it's important to really want what you're having before you move towards what you're wanting, because if we inadvertently try to manage our discomfort by replacing it with something that causes us to emotionally alter ourselves so that we don't have to experience this discomfort, then that avoidance is really linked to a deeper problem, which is that we're living in some belief that's not the truth of us, such as our inadequacy or our sense of not enough, whatever. And so that makes perfect sense, but the point is that what happens when you have something in your life that's so horrific that there's no way you would want to link it to something in you is bringing this into your life so you can experience a greater good? I mean, so there are situations in people's lives over the last week where people have lost family members, they've suicide, all kinds of things have happened since the last time I spoke. And then helping people in their struggle, how do I be with this? I mean, it sort of breaks my heart to think that something I said now is going to be a struggle for a person who's trying to apply this principle to the loss, to a loss of someone. And so I got to recap, you see. So how do you be with an experience? Or what is the principle of being with what you're having before you can get what you want? What is it really? So here's the clarification. If you're going through something that is so obviously falls into this category, there's no part of you that would have asked for this. And it doesn't matter if the situation you're dealing with, you know, if you can just absolutely 100% say, yes, that's the criteria, there's no way I can imagine this. The point is that if you have one of those, then how you be with it is not with respect to what you're having, but with what you're feeling. In other words, be with what you're feeling. That's what you're having when you're experiencing loss or trauma or something horrific in your life. So whatever's going on, and if you're in a struggle of being present to it, it's not so much that you need to own it, but you need to own this that you're having. Okay, and then you need to come see me or Jane. Okay, so that's the recap. The review. So one of the things that we want to mention with respect to this review is that there are times in our life where we could be so obsessed with what we're having or with what we're not having that we become driven. And so here's a picture of Gollum before his transformation. In the simple act of wanting something, and this is very natural and normal, it's okay for us to want something that pulls us into a greater expression of well-being and purpose. But the challenge is that, especially in these days, that what we want is often an antidote to what has been inadvertently a part of our own discomfort that we have yet to see how we have helped to co-create. And so part of the challenge is that we have to have as a part of our spiritual practice an awareness that we cannot source our well-being outside of us. And this is fundamental to being able to manifest our destiny. Now, we may not understand exactly how that's so, but suffice to say that until I understand the process by which I am creating the experiences that I don't like, I won't be able to understand the process by which I create the experience that I want in my life. Is that clear? Does that not make sense? And so part of our effort has to be understanding that whenever our tendency is, whenever our default position is to source outside of ourselves something that is necessary for us to find an emotional balance or a sense of greater well-being, then that is part of the problem. We have to fix that first before we can then explore the larger dynamic of working to manifest a greater good in our life. And so if that becomes this, we all know what the end of that story is. So our job, therefore, to move as we're moving towards this greater mind, or if we ask the, you know, if you want to do a spirit group Bible study, you can ask this question in your spirit groups. What does it mean to have the mind of Christ in you? What kind of mind would that enable you to experience? What kind of life would that enable you to experience? Now, don't try to answer that question in religious terms. Answer that question in terms of your own personal reality. What kind of personal reality would you create if you possessed the mind of Christ? Now, that's just the concept right now, so let's move it towards in this context. What kind of life would you experience if you could experience it from a greater mind? A mind that doesn't buy into your unworthiness, where unworthiness is not even an element that could crop up as a part of your identity. What kind of mind would we need to have to be able to really engage in giving our bodies what is needed in order for our body to partner with our body as a part of our spiritual journey? So the last thing I'm going to say, actually, this is what I wanted to end my talk with 10 minutes ago, but I got distracted. I think that's the last slide I have anyway. Okay, we may get to this, but we don't need to. Let's just get this. Okay. So many of you know that no longer have cancer, at least that's what the doctors are telling me. And so I have a new body. Thank you. And guess what? I get new eyes next month. I talked to Nicholas, the eye doctor. Yeah, Nicholas. Yeah, and I went to see him last year after Jeff was able to get his new eyes, and I thought, oh, I need to get new eyes. I can't see at night. Now, part of the reason why you don't see Gary and Jane at night is because we don't go out at night because we can't see to drive. So the point is that I decided then to see if I can get. And then my cataracts weren't severe enough for Medicare to pay for it. So the guy said, well, come back in 9 months, you know. And all right. Well, in the meantime, here I've had this other illness, and now I'm done with it, but I've maxed out my deductible, so I figured, well, I'll go get new eyes. And so I went to the doctor, and he said, well, your cataracts really haven't changed at all, but I can't see at night. I can't drive at night. Oh, please, please, please. Okay, we'll do it. All right, but then I got to thinking about it. Oh, my goodness, what am I getting myself into? I got to tell you, because I'm having some problems with my new body. And I'm concerned that my new eyes will have the same problem. Okay, the problem that my new body is having is with my old mind. I mean, my mind, the mind that I have right now. In other words, it's not satisfied. It believes that my current mind is not capable of treating it, my new body, the way it needs to be treated without relapsing. You know, and so I tried to feed my new body the same things I ate before, and it doesn't want it. And so every night when I go home to decide what it is that I'm going to eat, it's like I have to start all over. Because everything that I'm used to, my routine, I give it to my body, and my body reacts to it. It doesn't want it. And so I have discovered that my body is trying to train my mind and teach it how to be in order for my new body not to go into some kind of reboot of the old self. And then I got to thinking, this is exactly what happened when I lost a lot of weight and gained it all back. Is because I failed to give my new body a new mind so it could prosper. And now what happens when I give my body new eyes? Is my old mind going to allow me to see all the things that new eyes would now allow me to witness in my life? Am I going to be a stronger witness to the goodness and the beauty and the truth that surrounds me? Or is my old mind going to frame the way in which I'm going to look out at my life? You see. So we're all in this struggle, basically. And we could say that that struggle is an evolution of meaning-making. We could say that the struggle is an anointing of the Christ mind. We could say that is just an effort in being able to pay attention to what we're having to such a degree that we become a student within ourselves of this that we're growing in terms of our awareness. And so as we journey together in this unfolding, you know, we're going to be moving towards manifesting our destiny, greater destiny. And we want to learn this. And it's important to me that you know how to manifest greater good in your life. It's absolutely important for me that you know how to do this. Because absent of you know how to do this, knowing how to do this, is that we're sort of caught up in this world. And we need to know how to do this so we help create the life that we want. Anyway, I'm starting to ramble now, so let's stop.